go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A little bit of a lag there before the program began, occasioned by, occasioned by PebCac. Yes, problem exists between keyboard and chair. That was on me. You know, you're sitting there looking right at the buttons you want to push, and then you push the other buttons. Look, it's Friday, just like the little stinger said. It's Friday. A guy gets a mistake here and there, right? Yeah. It is, in fact, Friday. It's Friday, the 15th day of September, 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live. And that is where you go if you would like to, you know, say, click on chat room, pick yourself out a free password and a free screen name, and join the Merry Wacky Zany extravaganza, real-time, multimedia, that is The Horn chat room. Pick out the aforesaid password and screen name, and you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Laborman and Lizardo, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave, as well as midweek utility, pinch hit, chat room moderator, and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, who has electricity. Yes. We don't take things like electricity for granted anymore. At least, you know, not here in Appalachia. Because infrastructure. Let's just say that. Because infrastructure. But I'm here, you're there, and we are one together, cuckoo, ca-choo, and all of that. And consequently, it's Friday on the front porch, which means that here in about, 54, 55, 56 minutes or so, I'll fire up, or we'll fire up, the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and see what's on folks' minds for the weekend. Sound good to you? Well, I hope it does, because it's my, it's darn well my, just about my favorite day of the week. It's right up there with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Saturdays and Sundays are my least favorite, but that's, you know, because we don't get to talk. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is a listener-supported program. No advertisements. Well, wait a minute. There is one thing. New from Horn Nutritional Labs, courtesy of product creator Bill. Orgiastic Onions. A fabulous new... Well, no. The fennel was fabulous. An amazing new nutritional supplement from Horn Labs, Orgiastic Onions. Even better than Clockwork Orange Eye Opener. Yes, orgiastic onions from Horn Nutritional Labs. You can eat them like apples. And when you feel like you need something to get through the day, well, orgiastic onions are the very thing for you. They still make you cry, but it's a manly cry. Yes, they also help men who have that problem so that you won't come out of the bedroom feeling like a big old softy. Right. Orgiastic onions, only from Horn Nutritional Labs. And remember, as a special offer from Horn Nutritional Labs, we'll send you a bottle of orgiastic onions at the at the introductory low price of $29.95. But if you act now, and operators are not standing by, if you act now, you can get two bottles of orgiastic onions for a flat $60. How about that? By Grapthar's Hammer, what a savings. Yes, orgiastic onions, only from Horn Nutritional Labs. You know, I've never liked onions, and I just don't like them. So to this day, the only way I can stand to eat an onion is with orgiastic onions from Horn Nutritional Labs. That's a proprietary process. Jug of Punch asking in the chat room, how do you get the onion in the bottle? How do you get the ship in the bottle, right? It's a secret proprietary process that has been handed down through the generations to our proprietary nutritional supplement makers at Horn Nutritional Labs. Orgiastic onions. Sister Carol Baker wants to know, with orgiastic onions, can you smoke afterward? Well, it depends on whether you're combustible, really. But nothing to stop you from trying. Orgiastic onions from Horn Nutritional Labs. You'll be glad you did. All kidding aside, no, we don't have any ads here. We have listener contributions, and for the second or third or fourth or fifth week in a row or whatever it is, we find ourselves in need of a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. We have $475 to raise this evening. I wish I wasn't saying that, but it's a fact. We got $475 to raise. The reason it is not a bigger number than that, well, that's because of the subscribers. You can become a subscriber if you click on the contribute button and check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and boom, just set it and forget it. Remember, we're trying to get to a total of 400 monthly subscribers, and we are a long, long way away. We're not even at 100. But the fact of the matter is, if you do that, you can set it, forget it, and you'll know that you're helping to keep progressive, independent, non-commercial media on the air. So maybe think about it. And if you don't want to subscribe, well, whatever you can do to kick in to help keep things going, because that 475 is kind of a scary number. But thanks go out always to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Jim in Spain. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly to Tim. And no address. Thank you to Darlene, of course, in Connecticut. Thank you, Darlene. And as well as thanks going out to Robert in California. And thank you to our friends at Eastern States Pet Express in Florida. Thank you very, very kindly. That's why it's not as bad as it. That's why it's $50. The number is $50 lower than it otherwise could be. Help if you can. And remember, if you don't like PayPal and you would like to but you would like to help out, there's a subscription campaign over at Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com, under at Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, and that comes out the first of every month. So if you decide to be a subscriber right now, you won't even be charged until the 1st of October. And we are at the halfway month in September, and getting that knocked down, it would be a big, 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 big help. Note coming in, subject line, fundraising goal and orgiastic onions. Bob, you'll reach your fundraising goal if 8 listeners buy orgiastic onions today. 8 at $60 equals $480. That's true. Too bad we don't have any real orgiastic onions to sell. But we do send out bumper stickers to everybody who becomes a subscriber, so there is that. Yeah, thank you, Marty, for noticing the By Grapthar's Hammer, By the Sons of Warvan. Yeah, thank you for noticing that. Yeah, from Galaxy Quest, as uttered by Alan Rickman, as Marty notes, peace be upon him. Exactly. So, an update. Well, that's true. Carol Baker noting that fake orgiastic onions still sound a hell of a lot better than real bucket pudding. There's something about that phrase, bucket pudding. Yeah, come on over here, bucket pudding, and give me some sugar. Oh, yeah, Grandpa Jimmy Baker wants you to get on over here. Get on over here, sugar lump, and got some bucket pudding for you. Right. Yeah. Well, I'll be showering with bleach again today after that. But I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Looks like the story of the bus driver, sheriff's deputy, is gaining some legs. This guy really should not be around children or working in a law enforcement capacity. And sends me to provided me with a link to a website called New Now Next. And a very plain, well, very straightforward headline. Burn in Hell. The reporter on the piece, Christina Maruzic, sharing the story. Good. I'm awfully glad that it is getting legs. Because you just don't want your kids around that kind of nastiness. So thanks, Matt. Thanks for letting me know. We'll know that it has reached that we've sent Clay County into sweat condition alpha when it starts showing up in the for-profit media television broadcasts. Where to begin, as far as I'm concerned? Two things. One, so I got up this morning to find out there was still a world to wake up to. That's the driving question anymore. Is the world still here? yeah, Reverbo says, you're not going to slip that Galaxy Quest reference by me. but I also woke up to realize to watch as a bombing took place in on rapid transit in the train system in London. And of course, just because I'm funny with language, We introduced the term improvised explosive device to the common parlance with our incursions into Iraq and Afghanistan. Long about the same time that we added in the phrase asymmetrical warfare. Which is another Orwellian way of saying, we've got an army in the field, but they don't, and we're still dying. Asymmetrical warfare. But, that was what was being talked on the TV this morning. An IED, an improvised explosive device, has gone off at the Parsons Green station in the London metro system. And I guess you could call it wistfulness for a bygone day. I just said to myself, why can't we call it a bomb? I mean, when the Irish Republican Army was blowing shit up all over England, there was no problem. It was a bomb. It was a bomb, actually, rather. A homemade device, actually. A little bit of plumbing, some nails and ball bearings and scraps of metal. And shrapnel, don't you know? And a little casing for it, maybe a piece of plumbing and some explosives and a clock and that sort of thing. Bloody awful. But we called it a bomb. My theory is that we have to have special words for special people. And in this particular case, the special people are Arabic peoples and some followers of the Islamic religion. So they get a special word. Improvised explosive device. I mean, it sounds so much more devious, inscrutable, improvised. You know, just like a comedy troupe on stage improvises funny things. They just happen to be standing there, and I say, Ahmed, let's improvise an explosive device. Bloody good idea, right? It's not just a bomb anymore. So there was that. And this, of course, occasioned Dolt 45 to get real busy and start tweeting away. Yeah. Saying that whoever, and bear in mind, nothing had been said, but saying that whoever set off the device was in the sights of Scotland Yard when there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that, and even the Prime Minister of England said, well, you know, I suppose the man says things now, doesn't he? But actually, Scotland Yard? Who knows? So now, whatever is left of whatever's left after the spirochetes have been eating for 10 or 20 years is just making up paranoid stuff. Mm-hmm. And then later in the day, something that had been expected transpired. And it's damned well heartbreaking, of course. And I'm talking about St. Louis, Missouri, where a local criminal court handed down a ruling today And it was in the case of an ex-cop. The ex-cop being an ex-cop by the name of Jason Stockley. This is... there are protests ongoing in downtown St. Louis over this case. Jason Stockley was a cop, and in 2011, he gunned down a black man by the name of Anthony Lamar Smith. It has taken 6 years to get to this point. Anthony Lamar Smith, the black man, after a police chase in which Jason Stockley thought a drug deal had gone down. And for the longest time, this wasn't even going to be a case. It was only in 2015 that an internal investigation, after everybody you know who mattered, had decided that this poor man would have to live with the consequences, the deadly consequences of his actions, for the rest of his natural born days, mind you. And he should just be let go. Well, that's when the internal investigation turned up a little factoid. Namely, that Jason Stockley had planted a firearm on his victim. Wow, that's pretty damning, isn't it? Well, nonetheless, Jason Stockley claimed self-defense because, of course, as is always the case when you've got a black motorist and a white cop, he thought his victim was going for a gun. You know, the gun that he, Jason Stockley, dropped at the scene. Mm-hmm. Now, in the meantime, because sometimes civil process doesn't track exactly with criminal process, the city of St. Louis had settled a civil case with the family for some $900,000. Anthony Lamar Smith's family was pursuing a civil remedy, and their insurance company got involved and said, yeah, we'll pay $900,000. And the family accepted the settlement. Now, there are different standards of proof between civil and criminal cases. In a criminal case, a case must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil case, it's proof by a preponderance of the evidence, which is that 50% plus 0.0001 standard of proof, considerably lower than beyond a reasonable doubt. So, for most people, the guilt of Jason Stockley was itself beyond a reasonable doubt. But nonetheless, today, after a trial, which incidentally was not tried to a jury. Stockley waived his right to a jury trial and instead opted to have a nice, friendly judge sitting on the bench determine his fate. Instead, wonder why. Well, the decision, we've known that a decision was coming, and as a consequence, we were sort of waiting just waiting for the decision to be announced. And I suspect most of the community of color and most people who are supportive of Black Lives Matter, and most people who have a fairly decent understanding of the workings of the judicial system, knew what the result was going to be, and lo and behold, there it was. Since a jury, which might have, you know, some of those people on it, didn't get to hear the case, and just the judge himself, today, in an announced opinion, Jason Stockley, who planted a gun on the scene, on the person of the person he blew away, about which there was no question, it was a charge of first-degree murder. You know, premeditated homicide. Premeditated killing. And the judge, who relies on the goodwill of the police force, who is in frankly as much a part of the law enforcement infrastructure as a cop is, writing its opinion, the court spoke as follows. Finally, the court observes, based on its nearly 30 years on the bench, that an urban heroin dealer not in possession of a firearm would be an anomaly. Yeah. Urban. Of course, those of us who speak racist, we know what that word, that urban, means. The judge in the case further wrote, this was Judge Timothy Wilson, a circuit judge in St. Louis. This court in conscience cannot say that the state has proven every element of murder beyond a reasonable doubt, or that the state has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not act in self-defense. In other words, I guess he believed that Jason Stockley put that drop gun on Anthony Lamar Smith for looks. Al Watkins, who's an attorney for Smith's fiancée, Christina Wilson, said, "What the country needs to know is every single person in our country, we have a right to be mad. We have a right to disagree. We have a right to express our opinion. We have a right to protest. Exploit that right. Don't compromise it. Stay peaceful." And see, you know, this is one of those cases that happened with both a dash cam and an external video. Among other things, there was video of Jason Stockley rummaging through a bag in the back of the police vehicle. And prosecutors said, yeah, that's when he was getting the drop gun. There was DNA on the weapon. Okay? Here's the thing. The only DNA on the weapon belonged to Jason Stockley. there was no DNA from Anthony Lamar Smith. Zero. Zip. Zilch. In an effort to look as though this thing was not a boat race, that the fix hadn't been in from the moment that that Jason Stockley declared that he would forego his right to a jury trial and place his life in the hands of Judge Wilson, the court said, "This court is simply not firmly convinced of the defendant's guilt. Agonizingly, this court has pored over the evidence again and again, and we've looked at the videotape innumerable times." I'm guessing it's not innumerable, Judge, because you'd have to get into, a lot of digits to get innumerable. What that means is he didn't want to believe what his lying eyes were showing him. The judge claims that the gun was just too big for poor innocent officer Stockley to have hidden it from the cameras on the scene. Yeah. The defense counsel produced a couple of expert witnesses who said, "Well, just because there was no DNA from the victim on the gun didn't mean it wasn't the defendant's gun. It just meant that he levitate, no." But yeah. A bag with narcotics was found inside Smith's car. It later was revealed to be heroin. And the judge, in murder prosecutions, whether you, some people know, some people don't, you can also consider what are called lesser included offense. Things like second degree murder or negligent homicide. And the prosecution had asked for that to be considered in this case as well. But the judge said, "Nah, not gonna do it. Because you haven't proven to me that he didn't act in self-defense." Mm-hmm. Now, this all happens despite an audio recording. There's not just video. There's an audio recording, too. Stockley is chasing the defendant. He's got his partner in the car with him, and he says to his partner, and the microphone catches it, "We're killing this motherfucker!" Now, first-degree murder involves an element of premeditation, a decision, a guilty decision of criminal intent in advance of the actual act. Some courts have even found over the years that premeditation, of course, these are the kinds of cases that involve people that are, wrong colored and things, that premeditation can take place in a matter of seconds before the trigger is pulled or the knife is plunged. But when a cop, in the middle of a cop car chase, says, "We're killing this motherfucker," well, that doesn't count so much, because after all, he was a heroin dealer, and not just any heroin dealer, an urban heroin dealer. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, urban. Yeah. Steve in New York. "Wait a second, did I hear that right? The judge is essentially saying, well, an urban person normally would have had a gun, so it was okay to plant one because, well, even if he didn't, the cop had a right to think he did." Yeah, Steve, that's what the fucker said. Sorry. Try to keep the F words out of my conversation here. But yeah. That's pretty much it. Judge Wilson declared that if you have, for all intents and purposes, because there was no challenge to that audio recording. It was Jason Stockley's voice. We're killing this motherfucker. And the judge said, well, you know, as long as he's an urban heroin dealer, you can say that. You can form that intent to kill, and it'll be okay even before any violence has been presented to you. He had a partner on the scene, and there was evidence put forward that he had a wound. Jason Stockley had a wound. He had a wound in his lower left abdomen. And the doctor who conducted the, not Stockley had the wound, Smith had a wound in his lower left abdomen. And the doctor, who also works for the state, who performed the autopsy, said, that could possibly come from the fact that Smith was reaching for a weapon. You know, there's a lot of cases out there. You remember the story of the guy who went to the grocery store, but he was such a chicken shit that he couldn't go to the grocery store without a firearm, and he was in the little woman's car, where she had her, pink lady, 38 special Smith and Wesson, what the fuck ever. There's that word again. I'm sorry. He wasn't used to carrying it. And so when he got out to go into the Save-A-Lot or the Wigglin' Pig or whatever, he grabbed Honey Lamb's girly gun and stuck it into the waistband of his pants and shot his dick off. Remember that story? I remember that story. Well, that was not the nature of the testimony here. Mr. Smith had a wound in his left side. Now, why? Never mind. That's the problem. I can sit here for the rest of the night and pick holes in this case, and it won't matter. Because in the United States of America, the default legal position is that it is okay for a cop to shoot a citizen. That's the default position. Cop can shoot citizen, and then the cop union comes into play, and the entire infrastructure of law enforcement comes into play, and they come up with the excuse for why the cop had to kill the citizen who is, as likely as not, a black person. Because that's how the system works. Jason Stockley knew that's how the system works, and so did his lawyer. That's why they dispensed with the business of a jury. Okay? And so, whatever it is he's doing today, he's an ex-cop, that's how he's described. He's not going to jail. And he will know for the rest of his life that he got away with murder. What Shakespeare referred to as heady murder. Because she's out there in Missouri, Carol tells me the governor has already called out the National Guard to keep those uppity wrong coloreds in their place. Different governor than the one who was here when Michael Brown was murdered. Murder, 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 murder. Murder, 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 murder. So, yeah, the National Guard is there in St. Louis and fully ready to blow away anybody who breaches the peace. So, is there a lesson to be learned in this? If there is a lesson to be learned, it's a lesson we should have damned well learned long since. That justice, any concept of justice, quotation marks, justice, is entirely situational in this country. There are people who get justice of one form, and there are people who get justice of another. Jason Stockley and his partner, I'm sure, felt like they were dispensing some summary justice in 2011 when they blew away Anthony Lamar Smith after declaring before they ever got to a stopping point, "We're killing this motherfucker." I just got a note from Kelly asking me, is the show a rerun tonight? And I said, no. And I apologize if it sounds like one. The problem is, cases where cops blow away black people in this country have a sort of, and I'm not being critical of the question that was asked, or Kelly, I love you, Kelly. The issue of cops blowing away black people in this country has a sort of Groundhog Day rerun quality to it. Because it happens, and people try to manifest some sort of outrage, some sort of means of begging for it to stop happening. And then it doesn't stop happening. And by doesn't stop happening, I mean it happens again. And again. And again. And at this point in time, the judicial system in many parts, if not the entirety of this country, is a joke. It's a joke where only the living and the white get to laugh. It, meanwhile, with the situation being somewhat tense in St. Louis, people are running to local TV station chat boards and Facebook pages to let their feelings on the matter be known. For instance, one white guy who remarked on a TV station's Facebook page, "Fly a helicopter over and drop job applications and watch them scatter." See, of course, this is a play on the notion of the shiftless, lazy Negroes who don't want to work for a living. And that's just one. There's lots and lots of it. Enough to turn your stomach for a month of Sundays, as a matter of fact.
A heroin dealer ran from the police, hit a cop SUV, and produced a weapon, and you're protesting? Okay.
Justice was served. This is a dandy, too. Savages being savages, they use any excuse to riot. Foot Locker stores and electronic stores better be ready. They will be heading your way. One guy noting, due process. And then remarking on the protesters, one guy says, that's so black. Monkey Frogger, get high score. Run them over. Whoa, no, there goes all the expensive tennis shoes. Another white guy just says, bulldozer. Just another reason for some to start stealing stuff after dark. Why does media say black man instead of weapon-toting drug dealer who runs from cops? Well, because there's no real proof that he was toting a weapon. And because even running from cops... Well, let's put it, I know this is tough for some Bubbas and Cletuses out there, but the police are not allowed to be, as Matt in San Francisco just noted, judge, jury, and executioner. Matt says, I've always had an issue with the tight circles of law enforcement and judges. When judges hand down sentences to criminals, etc., some of those criminals swear to get back at that judge. The people who protect that judge are law enforcement. So there's a bit of conflict of interest when judges decide the fate of cops. Absolutely. And you know, but this is not rocket science. This is a solvable problem. If we wanted to solve it. And that's what it comes, and that's what the issue comes down to with any significant problem that this country faces. The problem is solvable if we want to solve it. All day long, I've seen hand-wringing on TV about Equifax. Well, this problem is solvable. Create a legal framework whereby Equifax can be caused to cease to exist by operation of law, and you will see the change, you will see a change in corporate behavior. But again, as I noted, that's rather of a progressive position. That's an extremely progressive position to take. That a country that feels like it's okay to execute poor people who make bad choices and do stupid things, like kill other poor people. A country that feels like it can do that, but doesn't feel like it can kill a corporation? Well, that's a commentary on the nature of that society. But it's a progressive idea, an extremely progressive idea, to suggest that we should have a federal legal framework whereby a determination can be made that a corporation should be caused to cease to exist. A corporate death penalty. A summary death penalty was handed out to an alleged heroin dealer, an urban heroin dealer. And the guy who dishes it out can walk away scot-free. But we have no way whatsoever of executing an Equifax. Maybe that needs to be a hashtag. Execute Equifax. Hashtag corporate death penalty now. But I'm not aware of any progressive politician, even Bernie, who has ever dared to suggest such a thing. Yeah, I know. See, I'm being radical again. Carol asks, are you suggesting the death penalty for Equifax? I mean, they're people, my friend. So it sounds legit. Corporations are people, my friend. Human beings. Of course they are. And along the way, Ron in the, I'm sure it'll be frozen any day now, probably day after tomorrow, over the weekend, says, by the way, who the fuck gave Equifax permission to collect data on my spending habits, protect it poorly, and then at least temporarily want to, one, charge me to temporarily freeze my data, and two, try to hide my agreement not to sue them if they tell me whether my data was compromised? Well, I know. And that's the thing. Elizabeth Warren is proposing, I think it's Elizabeth Warren, if I heard right today, is proposing that every American affected by this data theft be allowed to freeze their credit at no cost. Because, see, you have to pay Equifax if you want to do something like that. So that's how that works. But Ron asks a question that is existential relative to the big data companies like TransUnion and Experian and Equifax. Who gave them permission to collect and store it? Because if you change the facts a little bit and you say, okay, I've got, you know, I listen to right wing radio, so I heard the ads and I took them at face value and I bought gold now because, you know, gold's your best hedge against inflation. There's never been a better time to buy gold. So I bought gold and I keep it in my mattress. Right? So let's say Equifax just comes in and takes your gold and says, we're going to collect your gold for you. And we'll tell people how much gold you have if you want to go and get a, you know, a loan for a boat or a house in the country or, you know, a new transmission. It will do that for you. But they only tell you that after they've already taken it. You didn't give them any permission. You never signed off saying that they could do that. They just did it. In a way, while the Cleat Eye Collective out in St. Louis is busy making racist comments on Facebook about, you know, shoe stores being looted, well, that's what people see. That's what corporations like Equifax and Experian and TransUnion do to everybody. They loot your data. They come in and they take it from you without you ever granting them permission to do so. Now, sure, you sign off on a loan application. It says that the lender has the right to check your credit, but it does not say that you, by definition, grant Experian or Equifax or TransUnion the right to exploit your financial data. There's a big end run being done on you. And you know, in the years after the great bankruptcy reform that went down in the early aughts, things that didn't used to be part of it became part of it, like your power bill. Like your relationship with Dish Network or DirecTV. Well, you know, you don't have a lending relationship with the power company. They provide you the power. You pay them for it. They're not lending you anything. DirecTV isn't lending you television service. Your cell phone company isn't lending you cellular telephone. But lo and behold, all those bastards are on your credit report now. And the scoring is entirely arbitrary based upon whatever number the economic thugs at Equifax or TransUnion or Experian decide to assign to it. And here's an interesting point. Those numbers are pretty much, I mean, they can vary, but it's not like you'll have, 672 at Equifax and 19,312 at Experian and 27.5 at TransUnion. They're fairly uniform, which means there has been an agreement between the data companies as to what the grading scale will be, which you can argue, at least once upon a time when we were serious about such things, would have constituted a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act, because it's clear evidence of collusion among competitors. Right? So just to kind of bring it full circle before we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, a question. Where was more violence done today? Was it done at Parsons Green in the greater urban sprawl of London? Or was it done in a courtroom in St. Louis, Missouri? I will submit to you that the greater violence was done at the stroke of a pen in St. Louis, Missouri. Because, I'd argue, that at the stroke of that pen, young black men were condemned to death on a date in the future, at a time unknown, and that even the names of the young black men aren't now known. They will be determined later at the whim and the will of a police officer who will know beyond a shadow of a doubt that if he, in the heat of a chase, declares to his partner, "We're killing this motherfucker," that when he executes upon that determination, that there will be a monumental edifice of power and control that will rally around him and form an impenetrable wall and prevent him from ever facing anything resembling what? Responsibility for his intentional acts. Because you cannot convict a cop in this country if a cop decides to kill you. You can't get much more open and shut than this case. And even in this case, a conviction could not be obtained. At least that's how it looks from where I am. I have a feeling with somewhat different language. That's how Carol Baker feels. You know, it was just a couple of nights ago that I brought you the story about the cop who had proudly, well, not proudly, accidentally, posted the All Lives Splatter meme on his town's police department Facebook page. All Lives Splatter, nobody cares about your protest. Moral of the story, stay off the road. Well, lo and behold, one of the commenters on the story posted that. In tacit encouragement that someone will slaughter protesters who have taken to the streets to petition the government for redress of grievances, as is their right under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Where else do these people want them to protest? Well, they need to stay in their houses and protest behind closed doors where nobody can see them. That's where. Well, then it's not protest. And something else that Sparky sent along to me a few minutes ago. This doesn't bode well for the weekend. Oh, no. It doesn't. This is deeply disturbing. Neo-Confederates have decided to head to Old Virginia, Richmond in particular. Less than a month after the murder of Heather Heyer, the new Confederate States of America group plans an unpermitted heritage not hate rally at the Robert E. Lee Monument. CSA2 organizer and 3%er organizer Tara Brandau told WTVR, "I hope nobody loses their lives tomorrow on either side. That's not why we're here." She's been posting photos of herself on social media, flashing the 3%er gang sign. And wearing a hat that reads "Police" and Confederate flag fingerless gloves. The other people in her car are also flashing the 3%er gang sign. Of course, when the Confederates start marching, you know, without a permit or anything, there won't be anybody posting the All Lives Splatter meme about them and demanding that they be run over like animals in the street. Yeah, I agree. Angry Indian with a remark says police brutality is like a bad, fucked up dream that never, ever ends. Oh, but how about a little good news, too? Carol informs me, by the way, our friend Dr. Phillips was successful in getting the Robert E. Lee statue removed from Dallas. Good. Let's put one in the win column. It's nice to be able to do that once in a while. Check into email before we take the break to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable.
Scott and Punky noting ignorant outrage in social media and on media sites about looting. Funny how we hear not a peep when it's done by bankers, politicians, and CEOs who typically use a pen. Ron in Raleigh says the credit rating agencies are a part of the magic of the free market. They're free to steal your information and free to sell it back to you. Also, they're free to charge you to freeze your account. What the? I know. Capitalism. Ain't it beautiful? Do you think that Adam Smith, when he was sitting around swilling bad coffee in a joint in London, do you think that this is what he had in mind when he defined the terms of capitalism? Because Adam Smith, if you actually read the body of his work, is a progressive philosopher. He's a liberal. Okay? At one point in time, his idea of capitalism was a liberal idea. He wasn't marching around London with a sign that says, "All Tories matter." And if you could set the Wayback Machine for ye olde Starbucks in 1776... I can't help thinking that Adam Smith would look at you and say, "You're selling what, lad? You're selling your data? What the ever-loving fuck is data? Information, you say? You mean like I buy on the broadsheet every day? Only not, eh? I think I need to be, rethinking this capitalism notion." Todd in South Carolina, Stan, with a note. Wells Fargo, Equifax. We need to make an example of companies such as Wells Fargo and Equifax and other data miners. There's a reason they keep pushing their proprietary apps. Right, because they get away with it. Why do you rob banks? Because it's where they keep the money. Why do you climb a mountain? Because it's there. Why do you steal? Because people... Right. It's the same principle. Keith with a note. Stupid, stupid, stupid people. You can fix ignorance, but not stupidity. That this kind of crap makes me crazy. Talking about the... white folks' responses on the exoneration of Jason Stockley. Steve with a note says, here's the best part with Equifax and others. If Equifax collects your information, and they actually refer to it that way because I've had this discussion with them, and gets it wrong, you have to challenge the veracity of it. How does Equifax verify it's right? Equifax calls the provider of the information to verify it. And the provider says, yep, they owe it. Well, how do you know? Because we say they do. Good enough for us. And then if somehow or another it is wrong, it's still up to you to correct the information. If you call Equifax to correct it, Steve continues, they'll tell you all they do is collect information, but it's your information for which you're responsible. How's that for an endless loop? That's one sumbitch of a Mobius strip is what that is. And there, it's rather a long chunk of stuff to read. But Scott directs us to an article at Salon. How badly do the Equifax data breach damage the Social Security system? Salon investigation suggests My Social Security web portal could be at risk after the Equifax hack. Well, gosh, that just means we have to end Social Security, doesn't it? Sorry, somewhere there's a right-wing mind that's thinking exactly that. So, yeah, let's take a break. And fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Remember, if you want to participate, just connect to me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, and I'll add you to the group, and we'll see where the conversation takes us. We've been at this for a little over an hour, and I have big thanks to send out. Big thanks indeed. To Ernst. Thank you very kindly, Ernst. Our $475 fundraising goal just dropped to $375. This is doable. Thank you, Ernst. Thank you so very, very kindly. I can't begin to tell you. Well, the best way to tell you how important listener support is the fact is this program being here every night. If you go to tune in some night and it's not here, well, you'll know we fell short in a very, very bad way. Thank you, Ernst. Thank you very much. So if we can pull together a Friday on the Front Porch miracle and knock down another 375, we will have caught up with the week. So thank you, Ernst. Thank you very, very much. It is deeply appreciated. For all intents and purposes, at this point in time, along with the subscribers, you're the sponsor of the program so far. I hope you get a little sponsorship help along the way. All right. Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable time. This is Conversation Radio, and what is about to take place is very nearly unique in broadcasting. Ordinary folks, expert in the running and the day-to-day operation of their lives, engaged in conversation, freeform and freewheeling. We'll be back. I'm Bob. I don't wanna be free. little 10cc from way, way, way back in the day. And Friday on the front porch, 17 minutes after the hour, as we get things going. Let's start as other folks jump in. Hopefully they will jump in. Remember, this is a little different than when Sparky runs it because you have to jump in. I can't. If I could get the whole Shiva goddess of death and destruction thing going on with four or five arms, I could probably sit here and add this person and add that person. But the way the studio's laid out and the things that I have to be doing that are absolutely related to broadcasting, like, you know, flailing about with my hands and talking with my hands like Donald Trump, sort of preclude me doing the ad thing unless I'm staring directly at the Skype computer, which, you know, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Okay. So, anyway, if you want to jump in, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, and you'll be mightily welcomed into the conversation. Let's get it going with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, to tell you the truth, I started off good today, and then I got my notice for renewal of my homeowner's insurance, and it kind of set me on edge because things have been pretty tight, and I was anticipating it, but it still kind of hit me kind of hard.
Doesn't make it any easier.
No.
Given the risks that are pretty much extant out there, does that give them a case of the rate raising blues?
Well, last winter, as you may or may not recall, we had a very hard winter, and I had some ice damage on my roof, and a little bit inside, but mainly, you know, the roof outside. And I put in a claim, but because I had a high deductible, I haven't gotten all the work finished yet. But I'm thinking that I could probably find a little bit better rates than the insurance company that my real estate agent recommended to me last year when I was in the hectic move out and in here.
Well, just remember, whatever company you're using, Equifax probably knows about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I went online to get estimates, and, you know, they ask you, you know, a bunch of questions, and one of them was, you know, is there visible damage to your home? And there's, you know, there's some shingles missing off the roof, so I'd have to answer yes, because if you don't answer honestly, they can void your insurance policy because you were being deceptive, okay? So I filled out one full form, and then at the end they said, oh, well, our underwriters can't take on a property in this condition, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to another site, filled it out, and they said, oh, no. But then they recommended me to another insurance company and said, oh, find somebody locally because then you'll be served better. Well, when I went online, it was the agent that my late mother used to use, and I didn't get real good service from him after she died. The best he could do was, because the house was under probate, or, you know, it was still being settled, he had to accept the insurance company that it was a rental property. And I was the owner and, you know, occupant, but I had to pay an extra $300 that year for insurance because some, you know, stipulation. And I could only go through that agent because it was a manufactured home of a certain age. There was only one way I could go in town. So, you know, he basically didn't have to do anything because he was the only person I could go through. And today I left him a call at about 12:30, and I still haven't heard back. So I'm assuming that he's either went to play golf or he's, you know, I'll hear from him maybe Monday. But anyway, that's what's got me stressed out. the wind changed here and it's blowing back towards the gorge. So the Dalles right at the rain shadow on the east side of the gorge is really, really socked in with air pollution today. And they're doing some backburning and stuff to try to make sure that, you know, the fires don't spread any more than they have. And that's blowing back into Portland. So I guess we got the best air in North Oregon right now.
Well, I want to share something with you because we just one of the things I love about our little community is people really do have expertise that they bring to the conversation. And I just got a note from Carol Baker, who said, "Tell Clarity to have a good roofer go through the claim report provided by the adjuster. 9 times out of 10, the adjuster has screwed you. A reputable roofer should provide you with a free report. Our company does. And we get homeowners thousands of dollars more than the insurance company originally said it was worth." Carol notes, "I do that every day."
Okay, so call a roofer to get an estimate.
Yeah.
They said
a real legitimate, you know, not, you know, "Yeah, my cousin can haul a bundle of shingles on each shoulder right up the ladder like he was born on a ladder." Don't call that guy.
No, I got to get a bonded person to qualify for the repairs, but they did send their own adjuster.
Yeah, and his job is to protect his employer's money.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when somebody, and you know, Carol really does do this for a living, when she says I see it all the time, she means I see it all the time. Like,
well,
you
thank
know,
you, Carol.
Yeah,
I appreciate that because I've led a sheltered life, I guess. You know,
it's not you. Don't take that burden onto yourself, Clarity, because nobody is ready for this.
No.
I mean,
anyway, as far as what you were saying about them boosting the rates, you know, they're still recovering from the year before when there was a lot of fires and a lot of homes burned in eastern Oregon and eastern Washington. And this winter, they got a lot of claims for, you know, ice damage and things like that. So they're probably not even accounting for this year yet. But, you know, I've only lived here a year, and I was only here 2 months before, you know, I had my first damages to the property, and the real estate agent told me that it was a brand new roof, and it's not quite as, you know, brand new as it would seem.
Brand new is in the eye of the real estate agent.
Well, it's got new asphalt shingles on it, but they put it over dry rot.
Yeah, okay, no.
So,
back when the derecho blew our roof away in 2012, we learned that lesson the hard way, too. It was shingles over old rotten shingles.
Yeah.
And so they did
a facelift, more or less.
Yeah, and so when we were finally able to, we put metal on, and that's, you know, life. And turned out to be probably the same money or less money than what a whole bunch of asphalt shingles were, and the job was done in 6 hours.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Once you get it going, it's a one day deal with these people. You know, they got the automatic loaders that bring the shingles right up on the roof. Nobody has to carry them anymore. So, you know, like a hay accumulator that brings them up.
And Carol points out that if they roofed over dry rot, it should be a violation of the building code. So that's probably a pretty good indicator that a less than reputable source put that roof on in the first place.
Well, I'm wondering why the real estate agent never got back to me when I said, well, you must know, you know, who put the roof on before, and there must have been some sort of a guarantee or, you know, some sort of warranty on the roof. And no, it's as is. You signed for as is, so that means, you know, all that we're responsible for is the physical description of the property, you know, that it's a brick and wood, you know, stick and brick house, they call them, and not a manufactured home. The square footage, how many entrances there are, how many bathrooms, you know, when the wiring was done.
Yeah, and see, you know, sometimes real estate companies do that. I mean, I can speak from my own experience. 1 year in between years of college, summertime, I learned everything I ever wanted to learn about roofing, namely that I did not want to spend a lifetime doing it, because no. I got hired by a real estate agent to work with a team of my fellow ne'er-do-wells. And we spent a summer putting roofs on rental houses, and I'm surprised that any of them are still standing.
Well, you know that the Terminator, that's how he started in America. He was a roofer. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh yeah. I mean, we painted the houses, we roofed the houses, we mowed the grass, we did whatever needed to be done, and it gives me no joy to say this, but we didn't do it with pride, Clarity. We didn't.
No, and you know, I after
you girly man, you.
Well, no, drunky man. That was the past is what the past was. You know, remember when Dim Leader refused to talk about his past because he said those were youthful indiscretions when he was driving a car through a picture window at the age of 40? Well, you know, I was 19 and just, you know, making some money to take back with me to college for my sophomore year. And yes, let's say we had to paint a house and it was raining. You know, so we'd do the interior. Well, you know, there was about five of us, so we would we'd stop and we'd get all our necessaries for getting the job done, and the necessaries and what the necessaries were was a great big cooler full of ice and black label beer.
Yeah.
And so we'd start painting and drinking at about, you know, 9 in the morning. And yeah, the painting, we were really good at the drinking part.
A little streaking,
the painting, you know, the molding, you know, the taping didn't go so well after a little while, you know.
You need to mask your masking.
Yeah.
Well, right. Well, I mean, you know, it's hard to drink a can of Black Label. And the hand you've got holding the can of Black Label, and you're stretching the masking tape with the other hand while you're up on the stepladder, and then you get thirsty again.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you were sort of freeform painting, I guess, is what you'd call it, Bob. You know, like you weren't necessarily painting within the lines, right?
You are a forgiving soul, Billable Rick.
It wasn't the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, how tough is house painting? Come on, you know.
Yeah, and you know, some places have building codes, and they're serious about it. And some places have building codes, and they're not serious about it. And some places don't have them at all. And so, you know, I was long before libertarian wonderlands were really a thing. In many ways, the little community where I grew up was a libertarian wonderland.
Hmm. Did you go around with travelers painting houses, Bob, back then, or
no? No. We were working for a real estate office.
Oh, okay.
And they owned a bunch of rental properties, and you know, this one needs painted, this one needs roofed, and I didn't know until that summer that you could get truly, and I mean truly, wasted on and not even mean to, mind you. If you were in a fairly enclosed space working with that glue that you use to glue PVC pipe together.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
The hot glue.
No. This is the wet. This is the stuff with the, you know, you use the little prep with the little cotton ball on the end.
It's like glue. It's called hot glue, isn't it, or not?
I don't remember. I mean, it wasn't hot. It was just in
it's
a can.
It's not hot. It's just,
and
it's
you
blue.
Just, you know, you're just down there, yeah. And you're gluing, and yeah. You're piecing, and you're gluing, man. And whee, you know, and then
between
you,
that and the Black Label, you were like, you know.
Yeah, you blind. Come stumbling out, and you say, I need a beer.
Get rid of this glue taste in the back of my throat, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then you swallow your tongue.
Oh, God.
I speak that language, Clarity.
I think that was before I met you.
Civilek. Yeah.
No. Yeah, so Klingon Quaalude sub-dialect.
just like Mother used to make. Right. The Orwell had Newspeak. That was Gloospeak, Clarity.
Yeah, okay. You were a Resistolero, kind of. It's the same stuff they use for airplane glue.
Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa, who has a reason to know about these things, says that's solvent cement.
Solvent cement.
Well, apparently it solvents neurons. I think those are the brain cells that I put my ability to play the guitar on or something, because it's right.
So it's Carpenter's amyl nitrate.
You know, you could probably say that. Only the buzz is a little longer lasting, I think, and perhaps a little more dangerous. No, a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, because the poppers were just a little bit. You're getting it by the bucket, right?
Yeah, I first discovered those things in the bar there where everybody, the big dance bar in Morgantown when I was in college. What the hell is this? Oh, you know.
Well, the places I went, I never had to do it. There was so much of it just in the ambient air that you got a buzz, you know.
It was just in the HVAC.
Yeah, I was just running rampant.
Yeah, that was before, those sort of. When we were in New Orleans, they had some sort of air freshener thing going in the hotel there. It was the nicest smelling stuff I think I've ever run across. And, it was just delightful. And I said, what is that? And they said, we don't know. It's proprietary. But apparently the bars you were running in, they had a proprietary amyl nitrate distribution system.
Well, I think that Seattle was one of the, first places where it became a vogue, bar drug, and then just kind of went down I-5 down the West Coast.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
I had a friend of a friend never that was one of the first people who were diagnosed with what they
Just one second. I've got some auto-run audio going somewhere. All better now. I thought you'd gotten out a guitar or something, Clarity. I heard that, but no.
I'm just acapella. I'm just acapella in here.
Yeah, because you can't sing and play sax at the same time, can you?
Not and understand the words.
Wait a minute. Clarity gets a cowbell.
I think she needs a double there, Bob.
Bartender, make it a double.
Anyway.
That was good. That was a good one.
Well, I've got a bar, a gin mill story. This place I used to go to in Vancouver, Washington, was called the Elbow Room, and they had a bartender there that was 75 years old, old redheaded gal. And as a policy, they didn't serve doubles there. Okay? So, because you couldn't fit them in the rocks glasses. And we had some guy come in at last call, and he walks up to the bar and goes, I want a double Bloody Mary. And she looked him right in the eye and says, we don't serve doubles here. And he throws his money down and he goes, God damn, I want a double. And she poured him a regular drink and charged him for two.
Oh, he kind of had it coming, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they're Bloody Marys. It was just a little bit pink on top. Because it was all vodka and just a little bit of tomato juice.
Well, yeah, that's like my favorite little bar in D.C., just down from, Thomas Circle. It's a little basement affair. Best wings you ever ate in your life. A little place I've told the story before about called Stan's. And I walked in there one evening. We found it by mistake because we were up at the hotel just a block up, and it was a million. We got it for cheap because it was a million miles away from where we were doing our work.
You usually find out it's a mistake after the fact.
Right. So we wander into this little place called Stan's, and I ordered a gin and tonic.
And they brought me, I thought maybe they were just bringing me a glass of water till the drink arrived. This is the exact opposite of what you said. They brought me an iced tea glass that was full of gin.
Oh, jeez.
And you could do call brands for like $7. Happy hour.
Well, there's no federal tax in D.C., right?
I don't know, but it was just $7 for this great big goddamn iced tea glass of gin. And the waitress kindly explained to me, we're out of tonic, so we thought we'd just go the rest of the way with gin. And I said, suits me. And it was that place is amazing. Oh my God, the wings are so good. And you know, they're not a beer bar. I said, you know, what's on tap? And they, oh, we're not a beer bar, we're a drinking bar. I said, okay, gin and tonic. Okay, gin. And Boss Man Wayne was there one time when a guy who was about five times his size. Boss Man Wayne's not a big guy, but Boss Man Wayne was wearing his Bart Cop George W. Bush Worst President Ever T-shirt.
Okay.
And a guy about five times his size who had played for the Browns or somebody along the way said, man, I love that T-shirt. I want that T-shirt. Well, you know, you can write to Bart Cop. He'll say, no, I want that T-shirt.
That one you're wearing.
And you know, was ready to buy the T-shirt off of Boss Man Wayne's back, and Boss Man Wayne back in the day was a devotee of Crown Royal, and he ordered up a double Crown Royal on the rocks, and that they damn near just brought him the bottle. Well, that's double Crown Royal. It is. Bob, I like this place.
Well, I think D.C. has the lowest liquor prices in the United States.
Well, I know they have. I think they have the most liquor stores per square mile. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's part of it. Just like all the northern cities in Oregon sell a lot of cigarettes to Washington because they're $3 or $4 more a carton than they are in Washington State.
Well, this Friday on the Front Porch conversation is off to a roaring start. I just got a note from David in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, drunk painters. All of the painters who used to paint my grandma's white wood-framed house were drunks. I remember from early childhood watching them paint, crash in shrubbery, snooze on ladders, and tell funky jokes. Every so many years, another drunk would come paint her house. I even had an uncle who was a drunk painter. He missed the 90-degree left turn on the stairwell and went straight ahead through sheetrock. It left a permanent cookie-cutter-like impression of Uncle AC's frame there. Well, here's a cowbell for Uncle AC.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, you know, white is the most popular color because it's the cheapest paint you can get, you know?
Yep. Well, let me run over and check in with Billable Rick and see what's happening with him.
Hey,
I don't know if you heard it or not, but my analysis of the Stockley verdict pretty much jibed with yours.
I missed that part of the program.
Okay.
I was doing some billable activities, so I'll have to listen to it. So,
oh, you are in billing season.
Is this the Missouri case?
Yeah.
Oh, the officer was found what, not guilty, I assume?
Yeah, not guilty by reason of white.
Okay. Boy, I didn't know that. I thought it was either guilty or not guilty, or not guilty by reason of insanity, but I guess white is.
Well, not guilty by. Okay. Insofar as we've got the Philando Castile case to deal with, too, it's not guilty by reason of cop.
Right. Right.
Because that cop wasn't a white guy. He was.
Yeah. Well, didn't the judge sit on the decision for like 2 weeks after the case was tried?
Yeah, something like that. You know, just giving them time to mobilize the National Guard and that kind of thing.
Yeah. What they sometimes do, Bob, in those cases is they sometimes will write a written opinion after the close of the case in a criminal case. At least federal judges will sometimes.
Well, that's what he did.
Explaining. Okay.
This was a St. Louis Circuit judge.
Okay.
State case.
Okay.
And he did write an opinion.
Okay.
And in that opinion, he said, in the 30 years of the court's experience, we have seldom, it is
It is seldom that one finds an urban heroin dealer who isn't armed. Urban.
Since when is he an expert on urban heroin dealers, huh?
Well, interestingly, the heroin, I mean, you know, there's always been a little heroin running around, but the heroin problem almost it had, for all intents and purposes, dropped significantly before we decided to go and invade the country that provides most of the world's, you know, heroin.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you know, that's around 2002, 2003.
And that also happened to coincide, Bob, with Purdue Pharmaceuticals obtaining approval of the FDA for a longer acting, you know, Oxy pill, supposedly. Okay, so I think those two things are somehow related, you know. Well, and they, you know, Purdue, of course, hid the fact that these pills, you know, that it's highly addictive for one thing, and number two that they don't last 8 hours. You have to take it sooner, and the more you take it, the more often you have to take it, you know.
Yeah, and of course, I use that offhand remark that you chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. That comes to me from a friend of mine who had an Oxy problem.
Right.
Because they had the little time release when they first came out. They were little tiny pills, and they had a little time release coating on them, and you literally, I was told, would chew them up because then you would get the whole dose all at once.
Oh God!
Instead of it working as intended, because the theory behind OxyContin was that you would take it and it would time release in an even fashion, so that instead of the way it acted, you know, the other stuff, you know, you take it, you get it, and then it begins to degrade with the half-life of the medication, so that by the time you're available for another dose, you've actually been in pain for a while, because pain is bad for the human body. Okay.
Oh yeah, and the mind as well.
And so the idea was to make a pain pill that would provide even relief, and you know what? It worked that way until people like my buddy discovered that you could chew it up and really get a whopping good, you know, a good. I mean, if you can call it a good high. I mean, I've had to use the stuff, and I never found it to be particularly engaging.
No. No, I mean,
you know, I just go to sleep and dream weird ass dreams. You know, I refer to them as, you know, Samuel Taylor Coleridge Kubla Khan dreams, which of course is an English major reference, but you know, where you just, I mean, they're just bizarre. I mean, weird.
Yeah.
You know,
did you ever visit Valhalla during your dreams, Bob, by chance?
I try to stay away from Valhalla because once you go there, you can't come back.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard. Actually, was Xanadu Kubla Khan's palace supposedly, or I'm
well,
getting my
that,
literature?
No, no, your literature is spot on because, according to Coleridge, I don't know, maybe he was playing quarters with with Keats or something, but he had just polished off a good solid pint of laudanum, and laudanum was just an opium suspension syrup.
Oh God.
And he'd polished off and he had a Jones, and he'd polished off a bit, but it wasn't a problem because you could just go to that down to the chemist's and buy another bottle of laudanum.
Right.
As long as you had the money, as long as you had the shillings. And so he falls asleep, and he says later that he dreamt something like 800 lines of poetry because he had been reading about Kublai Khan. Yeah, you know, Marco Polo brought Kublai Khan's presence to the awareness of Western Europe back in the 1300s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he visualized in his opium dream 800 or something crazy. And so he wakes up and he starts furiously scrawling, writing this poem. And then he claims, because, you know, he always had somebody after him for money. Remember, he's got an opium Jones. He claims that a person from Porlock came to inquire after him about his bill with the tailor. and would not leave him alone. And by the time he got rid of the guy, he'd forgotten all the lines of poetry. But yeah, that's the in Xanadu did Kubla Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alph the sacred river ran through caverns measureless to man down to a sunlit sea. Yes, that one.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's interesting these digressions we get into here, you know? It sort of develops organically, you know, Bob?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love it. Yeah, looks like we got John here.
Yeah, we do have John. And by the way, let me update real quick. 13 minutes till 8, and thanks very kindly to Mark in Florida and to our buddy Frank, alongside Ernst, who got some company. We now have, get this, only $200 to go in fundraising for the evening, which is amazing and stupendous and, you know, cuts back on the bill pay and flop sweats considerably. But we do need to knock down another $200, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in order to finish the fundraising for the week and declare another official Horn Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle. And barring that, just a question. If you're feeling a little bit low, if you're feeling a little bit left out, have you tried Orgiastic Onions from Horn Nutritional Labs? Orgiastic Onions will put a sparkle in your eye and a spring in your step. I can't stand onions, and I've never been able to eat onions. And to this day, the only way I can consume onions is with Orgiastic Onions from Horn Labs. Try it today. You'll be glad you did. Anyway, and back to the program. I'm sorry.
It's even better than Extends, Bob.
Thank you.
Smiling Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He only gets a little sparkle on his teeth. I'm talking about a twinkle in your eye.
There you go.
we've got John on the line. Hey, John. Uh-oh, John. Maybe somebody's muted. And okay, well, let's run over to Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. I don't know if I'm on or not.
You are. You're on.
Okay. Every time the Windows does an update, they change Skype around, and I don't know what the hell, how to operate the damn thing, you know? We just got a update on Tuesday, and it's not behaving like it normally does, but that's neither here nor there. You can hear me, and I got a mute button on my mic, so we're good to go.
Okay, cool. Well, let me ask, did you get the dehum sorted?
Yeah. I had a guy under the house, and for whatever reason, the drain line cracked. I don't know what caused it. I can't see how Irma could have got in under my house, but who knows?
Irma went lots of places people couldn't imagine.
And I did have all those vents open, so yeah, it could have. It was pretty windy.
Oh, geez, never a dull moment. Still shopping for generators?
Thinking about it. There you guys are. I got you. Yeah, and I'm thinking about a Generac, but the guy that went under the house, he's got one, and he's not really overly enthused with it. So you just
when you go and you do all the Honda. Just Honda. And
okay.
If the problem is, I mean, we've got a Generac 5 or 6K, whatever it is, and we can, you know, we can run lights and stuff on it, but A, when I told you the other day, get the electric start, you know, that's a lesson hard learned. This thing's a bitch to start. And, you know, we've kept up with the maintenance and everything, and you run it and you annoy... You know, you got to start it and run it and annoy the living shit out of your neighborhood, even, you know, when you don't have an outage, just to keep things working properly. It's loud as hell, and, of course, it's unconditioned power. So, you know, I can run in the winter, I can run a heater. I can plug up a window unit air conditioner. It's got, you know, you can run 220 off of it. You can't do 440. I know I'm going to get corrected. It's not 220, it's not 440, but, you know, 220, 225, whatever it takes.
I hear you.
Scotch.
I hear you.
But, it, you know, if And that, you know, we got that back during the derecho when we were out of power for 2.5 weeks. And I drove all the way to Lewisburg, West Virginia to get it because it was the last one in the state. And, you know, we were happy to have it, but it will not run this stuff back here.
No. No, because there's a certain kind of generator you have to get for computer operations.
Well, you want a generator with a pure sine wave inverter on it that conditions the power.
Yeah, well, I got to get one because with global warming and everybody sitting on their ass, this shit's only going to get worse, you know.
Well, and you know, you're in a fairly mountainous region, so you know, the little toothpicks on the poles that they run through the woods where you are probably are something similar to what I have here.
Bob, you wouldn't have believed this place. There were telephone poles that are snapped in half. There were transformers laying in the middle of the road. It looked like somebody dropped a bomb on this little town. It was heartbreaking. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to have power for 3 days. So here's Murphy's Law. This is how it operates in Steve's world. This is, it hit Monday. Tuesday, I said, Karen, I'm going to go to the Holiday Inn and get us a hotel room because, you know, I'm sure you want to shower and I'd like to shower and I don't like being in the dark. So the plan was she was going to get the dogs and bring them to the house. I found out I had to schmooze the manager to let the dogs in. And she got here about 8 o'clock and said, Steve, our lights are on after I'd already paid for this room.
Well, that, in case you're wondering, if you were able to go back and look, you would find out that the instant that your credit card transaction went through is it's right down to the micro-millinanosecond, the instant that the power came on.
Exactly. And there, I didn't even ask for a refund. I knew what I was getting myself into. You know? I went into this with my eyes wide open, just thinking, if I get this room, my power's going to be on it. And sure enough, you know. So.
Well, did the motel have at least have a bar?
No, but they did have a buffet breakfast. So it's the most expensive breakfast I ever had. I went back the next morning, and me and Karen pigged out before she went to work. So. I came home.
Oh yeah, all the free breakfast with the from motels that don't have swimming pools or bars. Yeah, the free microwave breakfast is what I call it.
Yeah, it's what it was. The sausage is real spongy, and you could tell the eggs were powdered. And you know the drill.
Oh yeah, the sausage will bounce off the wall and come back at you with a vengeance.
So we usually off of me.
Yeah, we usually bring home a couple of the biscuits and use them for doorstops. And the gravy, we've been known to get some of that to go and bring it. You know, we got a couple of rooms that are wallpapered, and every now and then the wallpaper peels a little bit. We just bring some of that gravy home, kind of spread it on the wall, push the wallpaper back up. It's great wallpaper paste.
And I get home and I asked Karen, I said, is the AN site on the modem lit? She says, yeah. I said, oh, cool. I got an internet connection then. I get home, and it's out like it's giving me the big middle finger. And it never did come back for a couple of days. I still have no landline phone service. It's gone. But, hey, I'm just
don't worry, they're
be
still
where I'm at.
Don't worry. They're still billing you for it.
So, yeah. That's a good point. I ought to call and make them prorate that.
$425
an hour, Steve, is all they're billing you for, like me. Don't worry.
You damned well have to call them and because they won't otherwise.
Right. But see, the thing of it is, it's bundled in with my internet and cable. I don't know how they're going to sort that out, but that's not my problem, you know?
Right. I mean, I'm in an ongoing fight with the fine folks at Frontier. Because one of the two lines that comes in here, I actually was on the phone with tech support, and he says, "Oh yeah, I see here. This thing goes, my God!" And I said, "What?" He said, "You've got like 350 disconnects in the space of 3 months." I said, "Well, that would break down to it going off about 3 times a day." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, that's what it does." Now, naturally, he didn't say, "Well, let me transfer you right over to the billing office so we can credit you and get you an adjustment." Oh no! So I've been back and forth and back and oh God, and it's so, you know, this kind of ties in with the whole Equifax thing and what was said by email earlier.
it is damn near impossible to fix a problem with them. And they have, and that's, you know, that's something that somebody got taught in a seminar at Harvard Business School in their MBA program, that if you make it hard enough for a customer to get satisfaction when the company fucks up, that they'll just walk away and they'll take it. And that means free money for the corporation. Now, if you did that, you would be guilty of something at common law, tell me if I'm wrong, Rick, called fraud.
Waiver.
You'd be guilty of fraud.
Okay. Yeah. Death by deception. They'd come up with something.
And fraud in modern American business practices is another way of saying modern American business practices.
Yeah, well, it's standard operating procedure, Bob.
It would not, you know, this economy would not collapse if this economy would not collapse if we just eliminated credit reporting agencies.
No, of course not. No, it'd be fine.
And I don't know if you've heard this or not, Bob, but the Senate is trying to pass a law where you cannot sue financial institutions.
Oh, yeah.
Including Equifax and the other two.
For anything?
They're also trying to...
Go ahead. Whoever's just jumping in, go ahead.
Yeah, go, John.
They're also trying to fucking do the ACA repeal thing again.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, these fuckers get off on, like... terrorizing the body politic, not terrorizing, but they get off on just, you know, I guess terrorizing would be the term. I'm
well,
sorry,
terrorizing, or brutalizing, yeah, and they do. They get off on it.
And this bill now is. You think the other ones were mean? This bill's mean. It gets rid of the Medicaid expansion altogether. It gets rid of the subsidies and the tax credit and stuff. The other one they were going to replace it with supposedly still had that stuff in it. You know, they just cut it a lot. But this one, they just eliminated it altogether. I mean, not many people – I mean, if they pass this bill, there's very well good chance that the insurance market might collapse. I know a girl who works – for a health insurance company as a broker, and she goes, you know, these subsidies is what's keeping these insurance companies going, which is we all know is corporate welfare. And she says, you know, that's what's keeping these insurance companies going. And I was at Putting People First had a town hall. It was supposed to be for the Pennsylvania insurance. What is it called? The Pennsylvania Department of Insurance, or that's not right. But it is. It's a state. Department on the state level that does the regulating for the insurance companies in the state of Pennsylvania. And they're supposed to show up. They're supposed to have like three people that are representing this department show up, and each one of them had an excuse to not be there, you know, and so that they had to videotape it. But this one young lady who's a doctor, just became a doctor, was livid. I mean, she was like, of course. I mean, they're filming this to send to them. They're like, oh, if you film it, we'll watch it and stuff, and we'll hear everybody's testimony. And she was this lady that just became a doctor, probably in her 30s, you know, very young. And she said she was livid. She goes, you know, this is ridiculous. You people didn't even – you're not even here, of course. And she says, I think that's by design. And she's basically saying healthcare is a human right. And it absolutely is. And, you know, the Medicare for All is a pipe dream right now because of the Republican thugs. But, you know, I work with a guy who's a Republican, and he voted for Trump and stuff. And on the radio, you know, they do the news and stuff. And they talked about Bernie Sanders introducing Medicare for All. And he goes, what's Medicare for All? And I said, Medicare for All is, you know, Medicare that is expanded to everybody. And he looked at me and had this look on his face like he was thinking. And then he said, you know, that doesn't sound half bad.
Well, but see, John, that's because the Koch brothers, et cetera, haven't rolled out their ads talking about how it's socialized medicine, socialism, and we don't want no socialism here in America.
And then that, and no offense to your buddy there, he'll then turn, okay? Because... I mean, I'm sorry, but it's true. And the thing is, Medicare for All isn't socialism. And it's well, okay, it might be socialism, but it isn't... I like socialism. And you know what? You know who else likes socialism? Wall Street loves socialism. Wall Street banks love socialism. GM and Chrysler love socialism because they got whopping boatloads of it when they were about to goddamn die. Okay? But you know, corporate America gets socialism. We get the brutal capitalism on this end. And but it is not, because the other phrase is socialized medicine. It's not socialized medicine, because socialized medicine is a scheme whereby, you know, doctors, nurses, hospitals, they're all run by the government, okay? And that's simply that's simply not going to happen. And doctors are paid a flat rate, and, you know, therefore, you know, the poor things can only afford two Porsches instead of five. You know, no. It's not socialized medicine. But you will, you will by God hear that. And probably the most shocking thing to come out of the run-up to Bernie introducing his bill was when Max Baucus, the Montana former Democratic senator who was as responsible as anybody else for the system that we presently have in the ACA, when he said, well, you know, I get, yeah, we probably should look at Medicare for All. We should probably look at single payer. Really? What a pity you couldn't come to that conclusion back in 2009, Max. Oh, but never. Oh, I'm sorry, Max. That was back when you were cashing checks from the pharmaceutical and the health insurance industry, wasn't it? Yes, yes, it was.
And that's the thing that's just really just galling to me, is the fact that they said, and they purposely did introduce this ACA repeal bill, this new one, on the same day that he introduced the Medicare for All, because honestly, this new ACA repeal bill is probably going to pass. And the reason I say that is because nobody's talking about it, because
precisely.
Nobody thinks it's going to happen.
Yeah, there's a remark courtesy of Barkway in the chat room where she says, now's the best time for the GO pigs to repeal the ACA again, because people are focused on storm damage and relief and other events. You know, we got half the country right now, and I said something last night, and I'm going to stick by it. We got half the country right now, or more, on the verge of a giant steaming shit hemorrhage over North Korea.
Oh, that North Korea stuff, man. I'm not trying to poo-poo it, all right, just out the gate. I'm just going to say this right now. But this goes on and on and on about, oh, he launched a missile. And then I think that the
Kim Jong bad haircut.
Right. You know, I just think he's bluffing. I don't think that he has the balls to do it. You know, I don't think he has the wherewithal.
It's not even balls, John. He's not crazy. Okay? He's really not crazy. But here's the degree to which certain elements of the for-profit media are trying to terrorize, there's that word again, the American public. I happened to tune in to MSNBC long enough to catch former Bush administration spokesperson, advisor to the president, what the hell ever she was, Nicole Wallace, okay? Because MSNBC gave her a program, because, you know, she's a journalist, not... and so she plays this clip that somebody shot on their cell phone in Japan this morning. And it is of sirens going off all over some Japanese town. And she said, this was the scene in Japan this morning on the island of Hokkaido as missiles flew over. Did you catch the operative word there? She took one crappy little missile from North Korea and turned it into missiles. Plural. More than one.
That's your war propaganda right there, man.
You're goddamn right it is. And you know, I come back to something that I've been saying for a while, and I'd like to hear from the group on this, or people not in the group, for that matter. Is there an anti? Is there a viable anti-war movement in this country anymore?
Huh, what left, Bob?
There we go. What left?
No fucking way.
I mean,
I saw the same thing where it appeared that there were multiple missiles being launched at once by North Korea. It was like file footage. They spliced a bunch of, you know,
well,
film
yeah,
together.
Yeah, and they did that too. North Korea launched a missile today, and then they show North Korea. They show every missile launch that North Korea has put out for the last 15 years.
It was like four or five launches. They appeared to be all simultaneous. You know, it appeared to be like they were in a line, you know? It's like, wait a second, I thought they only launched one missile. What's up with this? So, you know, I guess it's just to scare us. I mean, I don't see there is no military option with
regard to Korea. No, it's not to scare us. It's because there are people inside this, inside the Trump administration who have a war hard on, okay?
Right, of course, yeah.
Let me see if I can find the story here. I saw the headline just a little bit ago. Just a minute. Is something about we have devastating alternatives for dealing with North Korea, and you know we have lots of military options, and they brought out H.R. McMaster for the White House briefing today, and Nikki Haley, David in South Carolina, Stan, pointed out under the subject line, "What the." Nimrata today, and that's Nimrata Haley, former governor of South Carolina, current ambassador to the UN. Nimrata today agreed that the USA has viable military options with North Korea. Need I say more? My detectors maxed out. But there are people who want to get their war on. And there are people who are, I guess, subject to being needled by Kim Jong bad haircut and are willing to take that bait. See, I remember back in 1993 when they drove the truck bomb into the basement of the Twin Towers, and Bill Clinton didn't take the bait and didn't start a war. Well, you fast forward 8 years, and dim leader does. And he had a hard on for Iraq anyway, because Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam, we're taking him out. And you get 5,000 people dead out of it, and a million dead Iraqis. And so there's always somebody there who wants to, because war is good for business. And they haven't quite figured out that when it gets to the point of nuclear war, that it's not good for business. But, you know, you got Kim Jong bad haircut out there running around saying, "Oh, I hold the fate of the U.S. in my hands." Really? You sure that's not a pebble there, Kim, that you got in your hands? Sorry, old 70s TV reference. Couldn't help it. You know, damn. How can I put this and not piss people off too badly? Everything that I used to think I knew about the progressive community has been turned on its head since November 2016. I can remember when there was a unified, solid resistance in progressive broadcasting to the Iraq War and to the Afghanistan War. I can remember when you couldn't find a progressive who would defend George W. Bush. But because certain things worked so very effectively, as far as I could tell, just going on things like Twitter and Facebook, what used to be the progressive community is shattered into a million tiny pieces. And all those millions spend most of their time picking at the new November 2016 scab to make sure that everybody stays nice and fucking pissed.
All by design.
Over one issue. You're goddamn right it's by design. And guess who designed it?
Well, fascist, for one thing.
Go and do some deep dive reading over the course of the weekend about the Facebook and the Twitter troll farms, and the fact that they're Russian troll farms, and the fact that they were, you know, it's not like they just directed their energies at the low information toenail toothpick bunch over there among the maggots. They deliberately targeted the progressive community too. And they used Hillary versus Bernie, Bernie versus Hillary, DNC, all of that crap as a means of destroying that, whatever. And it's not ever easy to achieve, okay? You know, people used to say, well, you know, trying to organize liberals is like herding cats. And I said, you know, bullshit, that's easy. You know, you give me an open can of little Friskies and I can get a bunch of cats to go where I want them to go. We're talking about wrangling butterflies. That's how difficult it is over here. But there was some degree of unity. And now it's just goddamn gone. And it's frustrating as hell for me because we might actually need it at some point, like to get 10 or 20 or 30,000 people in the streets to oppose World War fucking III.
You know, I was just at the grocery store, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. When I was at the grocery store, and I saw one of them stupid-ass tabloids that had a picture of Hillary on it about her book that said, in a picture of Trump that said above her, and it said, "Crooked Hillary's new book tells all." Or something like that.
I saw the very same thing. It was the Globe or the Star or the Inquirer or the Informer or, yeah.
Yes. Well, what I did was I took that and I turned it around right inside of the rack when I'm in line at the grocery store. And a manager actually saw me do that and he comes up to me and says, "Can you please not do that? We're trying to sell these." I said, "Why are you trying to sell this crap?" I said, "This is propaganda." I said, "I'm tired of seeing this disgusting man's face everywhere I go. His ugly mug. I'm sick of it. He's a disgusting, vile, nasty human being, and I'm sick of seeing his face." You know, and I didn't make a scene or anything. I kind of just said that's what I was thinking right there, all about what I just said about him. About his, you know, disgusting face and shit. But I just basically said, "Why are you trying to sell this? It's propaganda." And he says, I'm not the store manager. I don't order this stuff. I'm just a guy that's trying to do his job.
I am only following orders.
Right. And I could kind of tell that he might have been a Trump pansy. But the woman that was the cashier, I think was a transgender woman of color, and she looks at me and she goes, "Thank you," you know, because
how cool.
This is ridiculous. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. Why are these people selling this shit? Crooked Hillary, this man, that is so immature. Every time I hear it, he's still using that, and that's a divisive phrase. So there's pundits that keep saying he's trying to bring the country together. Well, why don't they take that and put it in their pipe and fucking smoke it? Because he's not trying to bring the country together. He keeps going on with his divisive rhetoric, and shame on Chuck Schumer and shame on Nancy Pelosi for collaborating with this fucking monster. You know what I mean? They should all lose their job. Anybody that lives in New York – vote Schumer out, even if you have to vote for the Republican. Anybody that lives in California, in the whatever district that Nancy Pelosi lives in, vote her out, because this is ridiculous. We need people that are going to fight against fascism, not collaborate with it. And I know they were trying to come to a deal with the DACA, but they have to understand something. Trump doesn't care about those people. He doesn't care. He's not going to do anything for them. The only thing that he's going to do, if he does sign it into law, it's all going to be for a goddamn photo op. That's it.
Well, can I weigh in for a second here?
Jump.
Please do, Rick. Please do.
Yeah,
and then I got a question for you after you're done.
Okay. You know, John, I think what Schumer and Pelosi did was actually quite genius in terms of, you know, dealing with Trump, because he's the kind of guy, in order to save face, he's got to show that he's winning. And I think they rolled him on the debt ceiling deal. And I think they're also trying to roll him on DACA in terms of, you know, taking advantage of his desire to show that he's got that he's done something. And, you know, unfortunately, as a practical matter, I don't know that, you know, Pelosi and Schumer are in the minority, but you know, by making deals that are actually favorable to the Democratic electorate, the Democratic base, you know, they're actually getting more than they ought to as a minority. And so I think it's, you know, I think, you know, they're experienced politicians. I don't know that they have any choice but to try to deal with Trump, because he is the president and he ain't getting impeached. He's not getting removed as long as the, you know, Repubs are in the majority, and probably even if the Democrats somehow take the House. So, you know, I think they've gamed Trump quite effectively. At least that's my take on the latest developments in Washington.
You establishment shill. You establishment shill.
Neoliberal West Coast lawyer.
Neoliberal establishment shill.
It does show that they can govern, though. You know what I mean? It does show that the Democrats know how to govern. But here's the thing, though. It's not going to matter, because people aren't going to vote for them. You know what I mean? It's
John?
I mean, what I'm saying is people aren't going to bring them vote for Democrats. The Republicans are going to get all the credit for everything that gets done, and Trump's going to get all the credit too. That's what's going to happen, you know. And that's a real shame.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Steve.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I have to weigh in on, because I think Rick got it about 95% right. There's two things going on here. First of all, what Pelosi and Schumer did was appeal to. It's more than Trump's need to win. It's his
vanity.
Need to be vanity. And number one, number two, I got to tell you, I have a friend of mine who's a dreamer. And when I first met him, I think he was 22 years old. And we met and, you know, hung out and stuff. And then at one point he says, you know, I have to tell you something. I'm like, what? He goes, I'm undocumented. And it was almost like he was ashamed of it or scared to tell me. Of course, you know, it doesn't mean never mind to me. So when I started hearing about this whole dreamer thing, I started asking him. He's like, you know, I came here when I was 4 years old. My parents brought me here. He has been undocumented his entire life. He's lived in New York City his entire life. He worked. He graduated from high school. He went to college on his own dime his entire life. And I'm going to be honest with you. If goddamn Satan signs it himself to give justice to that guy and the other 800,000 like him, I don't care. Number one. Number two, the political hardball part of what they're doing is it has the effect of benefiting, and I don't care who it benefits, whether those any dreamer happens to be a Republican or a Democrat, I don't care. These are people who are no less American I am no more American than they are. They've been here. They've been raised here. I want whoever they are I want them to be a part of my country. That's number two. Number three, the great thing the effect of this does politically is, first of all, no Democrat is going to vote for Trump because of that. No Republican is going to, let me rephrase that. What the huge political benefit is, it's going to piss off an awful lot of maggots, to the extent that those people are going to just either not vote, or they're going to vote for anybody but Trump. So he has a small constituency of about 33 to 34%, which is exactly what his approval rating is in the polls. And if the Democrats can separate his base from him, if in that process they can achieve some things, so be it. I don't see a downside. And I know John is expressed this issue about, well, he'll get credit. So what? So what if he gets credit? Those dreamers are never going to, at no point, are going to say, if they ever become citizens, which that's not even a guarantee that that's going to happen anyway, you know, they may become legalized and be permanent residents. But they're not going to forget that this was the guy who wanted to deport them. That's not going to be an easy, you know, if any dreamer after that says, well, this was the guy that gave me citizenship, it's not going to be hard to say, yeah, this is the guy who also wanted to deport you and you and your family. And the only reason you got that citizenship was because of two Democrats played it.
Well, and that was where I was going to go. You know, who got this done? Trump will say, you know, oh, they're great people, I love them. But the fact of the matter was, he talks about them like animals.
The real
accomplishment is on the part of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And I realize, of course, and I mean, I'm not directing this at you or anybody else, but just, you know, sort of an observation in the wider world. I realize that neither Nancy Pelosi nor Chuck Schumer are anywhere near ideologically pure enough to satisfy the purity tests to which people are now subjected. But when, okay, here, just by way of example, long, long time ago, a little town called Gwinn, Alabama, was blown the hell away by a massive tornado. About 100 miles away, there's an Amish community north of Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. And they loaded up immediately and came down to help deal with the damage. The women came down to help cook and feed. I mean, you know, it's the hierarchy, the structure, the culture. And the men came down to, you know, work and clear debris. And somebody looked at one of these Amish guys as he's standing there with a chainsaw in his hand, jumping out of the back of a pickup truck, and said, I thought you people didn't believe in things like power tools and cars and stuff. And he said, look around here, my friend. And he said, this is no time to stand on doctrine. And that's this situation. This is no time to say, well, you know, okay, I mean, Nancy and Chuck aren't ideologically pure enough. This is no time to stand on doctrine. This is about saving lives. Your friend there, Steve, you couldn't drop him back in, I don't know, Puebla State in Mexico, because he knows nobody there and nothing about it.
Right. And the only reason he speaks Spanish is because his parents do.
Right.
And another thing, too, is you can't exactly tell the people in the Florida Keys, you know, guys, you know, we can't, we can't give you relief unless we can cut the deficit some more. So, you know, you just have to go fuck yourselves, you know. I mean, you've got to help people.
And
there is no way the Republicans were going to be able to do it with their own caucus.
And I want to, and I want to, I want to go to, I want to go.
Why did he?
Hang on just a minute. I want to go to Steve for a minute here, because he's got a burning question. But, you know, I also, what was I going to say? You mentioned the Keys. The fact of the matter is, there were members of the Texas delegation who voted against Harvey relief. There are Republican congressmen from Texas, not from the affected areas, who voted against relief for their fellow Texans. And if those fuckers are reelected in 2018, and they will be, everybody along that Gulf Coast has a right to look at the people in that congressional district and say, well, I guess we know what you think of us. You know, that dumbass Rick Perry was talking secession a couple of years ago. If the entire Gulf Coast of Texas said, well, you know, fuck off to the rest of y'all, we're going to go our own way. You know, it wouldn't be the first time one state was carved out of another. West Virginia, cough. But Steve, go ahead. From Georgia Stan, Steve.
Thanks, Bob. And this is directed towards Rick, since he's knowledgeable in the law. Oh, and you are too, so either of you guys can probably help me out with this. You know, when Equifax first announced this boob that they did and compromised more than 40% of the population, probably more, they said, well, you can go on our website and see if you've been affected. And, of course, that's your gut reaction. You want to know if you've been affected. However, there's a caveat in there, or there was, that if you even check to see if you've been affected, you waive your rights to any class action suits. Now, they've come back later and retracted that, but I want to know if that retraction is going to hold, or is it just smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, to answer your question, I mean, I can't say I've, you know, reviewed that a whole lot, but I mean, in general, you know, I think they were requiring customers who signed on to their website to agree that they would arbitrate any disputes between them and Equifax.
And an arbitrator, and, right. And you know and how that's going
that,
to go.
You know, the sense that I got is that they could only, you know, that would only be binding with respect to people who subscribe to their credit protection services already. Okay, it wouldn't apply to those who were just, let's say, going onto their website to put a freeze on their credit, you know, so they can't be the victims of identity theft, that sort of thing. So, you know, I don't think that would ever have been upheld in a court, you know, that kind of a, you know, that's a real sharp kind of practice.
But initially, it was been reported that just peeking to see if you've been affected, you know, checked off on some kind of nonsense. Nobody reads the fine print. In fact, South Park did a whole episode on that fine print shit.
Yeah.
But I digress. And I was just wondering if that was binding and you were truly waiving your rights just to see if you've been affected or not.
Well, the company will certainly make that argument.
Yeah, sure. The company lawyers would make that argument, but I would say that, you know, the equities would certainly favor consumers. If you live in a
place like New York State, where right. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman jumped right out of the box and said, "Oh no, that's fucking illegal.
Yeah,
that's unenforceable." Yeah.
Well, they have since publicly retracted it, but how concrete is the retraction?
Well, I suppose if they try to reverse the retraction by taking a contrary position in a court, you could hold that retraction against them, and they could be stopped or prevented from, you know, trying to rely on that waiver.
Right. That could be a whole other lawsuit in itself, you know.
Well, yeah. It, yeah. I mean, this is, yeah, they're totally fucked, the Equifax, and, you know.
But Rick, I'm sorry. I disagree. They aren't.
No. I used fucked in a different sense. They're not fucked, but, I mean, they're fucked in terms of they're criminals, basically, and they should be, you know, their executives should all be thrown in jail. Okay?
I mean, who doesn't want to know if they've been affected by this? And the only way to know is to go on their website.
Yeah.
And find out. That's your visceral reaction. Well, yeah. Fuck, am I part of this or not, you know?
Yeah, well, but what you need, Rick, you might, and this sort of dovetails with your question, Steve, so I hope you won't mind me barging in.
No, please do, Bob. I'm gonna pause.
Oh, and before I do, 29 minutes left in the program and $200 in fundraising to go for a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. I can't apologize enough for having to fundraise this way. I'm sorry. If we had the $410 a month subscribers, you'd never hear a peep out of me about this. But, you know, we need to raise $200 between, you know, and let me just tell you, there's not that much going to come down because it's the middle of the month. And, you know, we have pretty good success with the first of the month with the subscribers. Not that many subscribers from here on out. So it's not going to come down a whole bunch.
please, if you can, help Bob out.
But hold up. Don't help Bob out. You know, help keep
the Horn family.
Help keep this on the air.
Right, we need this.
I'm sorry,
Bob. I didn't mean to misspeak.
No, you didn't misspeak, and I'm not jumping on you. I love you, brother. But you know, I don't want people thinking that I'm going to run out the door and get
a Lamborghini.
My ass, it'll be a Porsche. Damn it! I thought we cleared that up. I'm older now, and I'm a little more creaky. I think I'll just go for a Mercedes Benz.
Just an order of orgiastic onions, Bob.
Oh well, good. They won't arrive because they're fake. But you know, they will cure what ails you. The marketing department, as a matter of fact, tells me that orgiastic onions for those times when your ogling object refuses to obey. Orgiastic onions only from Horn Labs. You know, I can't stand onions. And to this day, the only way I can stand to eat an onion is by taking orgiastic onions every day.
Not even on a cheeseburger. Right?
Not even no, absolutely not. But the question I was going to ask alongside all of this is, and I'm guessing you might have the experience necessary to answer it, Rick. What does it mean when they talk about freeze your credit?
Okay, what it mean? My understanding of what it means, at least from listening to Norman, and there was a good article in the Chicago Tribune this week about how to go about freezing your credit. It means that you cannot, there cannot be, you know, if there's like an inquiry to extend new credit to you, that that your account gets flagged, and you know there will not be new credit issued in your name. With regard to existing credit lines that you have and credit cards you have, it would not affect your ability to use those credit lines. But if you want to increase like your credit limit on a card that you have presently, you wouldn't be able to do that. You wouldn't be able to get a home loan. You wouldn't be able to get a car loan without unfreezing the credit. Okay?
Yeah.
I need to add to what Rick was saying. I'm not a lawyer.
Hi, Scott.
Obviously.
Hey, Scott.
Hi. There are two types of credit freezes. One is the one that you're discussing. The other is the one that applies to folks like me who are just piss poor, okay? And our version of credit freeze is it'll be a cold day in hell before we can get a credit card. That's not one of those, what do they call those? Those credit cards where you have to set up a bank account. There's a word for that. Secured credit card. and even they, you know, you send the application in and you hear this little giggle off in cyberspace. You know. So I didn't mean to butt in there, but.
No. You remind me of a great episode of The Simpsons, Scott, when Homer wanted to buy an RV. And they ran his credit and bells and sirens started going off. And Homer said, "Is that a good siren?" And the RV salesman replied to him, "Have you ever heard a good siren, Homer?"
Let me just jump in here for just a second. From the way I understand it, and I could be wrong, research says, to unfreeze your, once you freeze your credit, to unfreeze it, there's a fee to $10 per credit agency. So if you wanted to go out and buy a house or a car or just anything on credit, you would have to unfreeze it and pay a fee to do that, which to me is bullshit, you know?
Well, it's all a racket.
I wanted to pass along a couple of things. Bob, you were talking about the Texas Congress people who refused to vote in favor of hurricane relief for Hurricane Harvey. The same thing was going on in Texas up in Gainesville. Ted Yoho, who is a real wackadoodle up in Gainesville, I think the third district in Florida, he's another one that doesn't support relief because Irma didn't affect his district. And the other Steve, not Steve from Georgistan, but the other Steve who we don't hear much from, made a point about the Trump fans getting pissed off by Trump's action or inaction, okay? You got to remember that we're on a continuum. The mindset of voters in the primaries changed in the run up to the during the general election, and it has changed again. It's, you know, not changed, but it's in a constant state of flux, you know, from primaries to general to election to post-election to today. And you can guarantee it's going to be in that same sort of flux, you know, in the coming months and even years with Trump and the rest of the people in Congress. The reason I say that is, since we're not static, it's all about a state of change. And the other Steve mentioned something that I've been beating the drum for a long time, and that is this. People pay attention, and the Trump fans are going to be particularly anxious to raise hell if action or inaction by Trump and or the rest of the Republicans affects them in a way that they don't like. Because they've bought the snake oil. They've put down their dollar, so to speak, okay? They've got the product. So if the product doesn't perform, they will be the first people that you will either hear from, or, as Steve was saying, they'll become disenchanted and say, well, fuck these people.
Well, since we're making mention, oh, by the way, thank you to Louis. Thank you, Louis. Thank you very, very kindly for getting us down below the $200 mark. We're now at only $175 to go for a bona fide, no kidding, Friday on the Front Porch community miracle. Thank you, Louis. Thank you so very, very much for helping us to keep this on the air. I freely admit that I have really, really, really shallow moments. And this is one of them. You know, y'all talked about...
This is why we love you, Bob.
Y'all talked about how, after Chuck and Nancy did the whatever they did in the way of a DACA deal with Dolt 45, and, you know, how the maggots were going crazy. I got up yesterday morning, and just the very thought, they posted an image on a story over at that website that rhymes with light and fart of a burnt Make America Great Again hat. And you had maggots like Joe Walsh and maggots like Breitbart. Oops, I said the word. Well, as long as I don't say it two more times, then Andrew Breitbart won't show up in the studio. Oh, that's twice! Anyway, I was so happy. The first thing I did, you will not believe me, but it's true. I queued this up, and I was actually going to use it as the bumper last night, but I didn't. But I queued this up because I was just so gloriously tickled. I was actually dancing in the studio. They're burning maggot hats. Andrew Breitbart's turning in his grave.
The earth says hello. Good morning, starshine. You lead us along, my love and me, as we sing our early morning singing song.
Here comes.
What a booby, swoopy, la la swoopy, la 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 la.
That's how happy I was.
Yeah.
I was actually playing the song that I deliberately subjected myself to the happy little song that is the worst earworm I know.
Well, you know, Trump is also in a bind with Nancy and Chuck, because he can't admit anything. He can't admit that there was a deal or even moving toward a deal on DACA or the Dreamers or any of this other stuff. And he also can't admit that he's been played. Okay? So he's screwed from several different directions. And as we all know, his downfall eventually will come because he has to look good and be right by making others bad and wrong. And his makeup is such that he cannot stand to be embarrassed or made to look like he's not just a number one head honcho. It's a delight to watch. I may send me that song, Bob. I may cue it up myself. But one other thing before I leave off for someone to come in, and some of the material in this documentary is dated, but I very much recommend the 2004 Frontline episode called The Secret History of the Credit Card. And you can find it on PBS, watch it free. It may even be on YouTube. It's from 2004. Some of the information is dated, but a lot of it is still solid and very useful when you want to deal with banks, because they go into not only the history of the credit card and the history of the way banks fuck over people, but also these credit reporting agencies, which to me are worse than spawn of Satan. But that's just me.
Hey, I got to run, everybody. I've got a concert to go to tonight. I'm going to see Hall & Oates and Tears for Fears at the Staples Center, and then tomorrow night at the Rose Bowl, Green Day. And awesome. I just saw Clapton on Wednesday. Clapton with Gary Clark Jr. Boy, the guy plays a guitar like Hendrix and has a voice like either Curtis Mayfield or Marvin Gaye. I can't figure out who he sounds like more, but just wonderful guy.
That's awesome, Billable Rick. I'm going to fly to the West Side. Me and you are going to take in some shows, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We got lots of concerts here. It's one of the entertainment capitals of the world, man.
Now, when do you go to Cupertino or San Juan Capistrano or whatever to see Al Stewart?
That's November 23rd, I think.
Oh, okay. So I've got time to get my plane ticket.
Absolutely. You bet. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll get a ticket for you. I'll get three tickets or four.
It only takes one for me. I'm not that big.
Well, no, for you and Agnes. You got to bring Agnes along. Come on.
Agnes is a little dodgy about getting on airplanes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just get two tickets then.
And by the way, I just got a note courtesy of Marty, who says, speaking of you, I hate him at times like this. So, yeah, there's that.
Sorry, Marty. So anyway, I got a jam. Y'all have a great weekend, okay? And I'll see what I can do about reducing the deficit here, Bob. Okay, I'll take a look at my bank balance.
Well, I just got a note from Silent R. Lamar.
Yeah.
You know, he put a challenge on the table earlier that was left lie. But he's trying again tonight. If somebody'll pitch in the 75 bucks, Silent R. Lamar says I'll do the other 100. Which is mighty, mighty big. So
mark me down for 25, Bob.
Okay, so we got 50 bucks to go, and Silent R. Lamar will see it and raise it, and it will be an official mid-month Friday on the Front Porch Horn Community Miracle. So
awesome.
Thank you very kindly, Silent R. Lamar, and thank you for taking a bite out of it, Rick, and enjoy the show, man. Enjoy the show. We'll be looking forward to the.
Hey, thanks. Betcha.
Oh, and Laurel just told me Cheech and Chong are at my casino on Saturday, October 21st at 8 p.m. I bet they're still fun.
Oh God, yeah.
Even if they're just
with you.
Even if they're just doing their greatest hits.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds great. Well, you all take care, okay?
All right, you take care as well.
You betcha.
Bye,
Rick.
Bye.
Yeah.
See you, Rick. Oh, hey, thanks. Yeah, I think we're not in too terrible much danger this weekend, but it's coming. Yeah. It's coming.
Well, the Hawkeyes play Northern Texas, so.
Well, I think we've got, like, Delaware or somebody, so.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you guys, you probably know I'm an Ohio State fan, just by being from Ohio. I don't think anybody could lay an egg like the Buckeyes did last weekend.
You know, I've tried to be judiciously silent.
But to be in all honesty, I have friends of mine who, well, you know this, Bob, you've been through Ohio, that some people just go, crazy weird about it, like lose sleep over it.
No. Guy James just rode out a fucking hurricane on the west coast of Florida, and I'm pretty sure he was more pissed about the Ohio State game.
Who's Guy James? Sorry if I don't, if I'm being stupid.
The maximum awesome progressive broadcaster of days gone by and my partner in crime from time to time in early trips to D.C. And
Guy's a legend.
And I mean hardcore Buckeye fan.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I like them, but I could never take any sport, any, I don't know these people. I'll never meet these people. I don't want to spend too much about the game. I kind of expect it to happen. But some people get crazy, and you know this too, Bob. I'm sure you have Mountaineer
fans. Oh, bullshit.
I'm a
University of Alabama alumnus, Steve.
Okay. Never mind. I forgot about that. But yes, it gets you. So you and I are reading off the same page that some of these people
I remember several years ago when Alabama lost to like the Louisiana Polytechnical School for the football challenged Raging Cajuns, and the head football coach of the University of Alabama, Nick Satan, actually stood behind a podium and compared it to Pearl Harbor and 9/11. No shit. So I get it. I really get it.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting here in my office and I'm staring out. And it's funny you say that. I'm staring out at the Freedom Tower right at Ground Zero. So interesting choice of words there. But yeah, I don't look. I like the
game.
Well,
I kind of wondered why the sound effects of the mean streets of New York that usually come with your calls weren't there. It's kind of quiet in your office.
Yeah, no, I'm in the office tonight. And
what are you? Are you in fiscal year billable phase like Rick is?
Well, since I work for myself, I don't really have that problem. What I'm doing is I'm doing. I kind of wish I had that problem though. Sometimes
you've got the Duck Drake private eye problem, Steve.
Yes,
the one okay. It had been a thin week. I had just finished an old case. I needed a new case. And it shows him taking a case of empty beer bottles and chucking them out the window. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm actually writing some I mean, my client base is like startups and small businesses. And I was an employment lawyer. Right. I know employment law very well. So I'm doing some manuals and stuff for employers to try to keep them working in the coloring in a line, so to speak, with employment laws in New York.
Which can be that's no small task. It ain't Alabama.
Yeah, and yeah, so I know everyone is just probably falling asleep from me talking about that.
Oh no. But I do have a little bit of breaking news. I got a note from Mark in Florida, one of the sponsors of this evening's program, and then I checked in with Carol Baker because she's monitoring the situation from out in Hooterville. Things might be getting a little tense this evening in St. Louis. Of course, the National Guard has been pre-deployed to keep anybody from getting uppity. But Carol tells me protesters are gathering in the central west end of St. Louis, resuming demonstrations in Maryland Plaza at the Carnahan Building. Pepper spray has been deployed. An hour ago, the crowd on Tucker had been fully dispersed. Expecting further protests into the evening. Police are blocking protesters from the highway. And if you go to the Fox 4 News Kansas City Facebook page, Carol notes, the white rage continues. And go there at your own hazard. You'll need a shower with bleach when you come out of it. Fortunately, Clorox now makes a handy spray bottle of stain remover bleach, and you can just hose yourself down with that. That's an unpaid product placement here from the Horn.
Do you guys mind if I clarify something?
Wait a minute. Let me ask a real quick question. Don't orgiastic onions do the same thing, but organically?
Yes, they do, but you know the other effects of orgiastic onions can kind of get in the way of the whole detox situation. And because, you know, if you get the orgiastic onions on your, well, you know, it ain't pleasant.
Hey, guys, I want to clarify my position on the Dream Act real quick.
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate all the comments for everybody, but I think you guys are getting me all wrong. I am absolutely in favor of this fucking monster signing this into law.
Oh, no, no, no. I wasn't at all confused on that.
But
yeah, no, I got it. I got it, too. I get it.
My position on this is, why do we have to have this discussion when they should be given citizenship automatically and amnesty, which he is not willing to move an inch on that. And the thing about, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Schumer meeting with him is, if they're going to meet with him on this issue, how many other times are they going to meet with him? Because what's going to happen is, if they do a deal with this, which obviously they should, what happens when he wants to do something and they end up collaborating with him on something that's ugly and hateful? You know what I mean? Because it's going to pass.
Yeah, and it's look, I'm the guy who went on air the day after the election and said no collaboration. And I realized that I'm in a position to maybe have to eat some of those words. But unlike the vast majority of people who do this kind of work, I don't have a problem sitting and saying that I am, you know, that I too have some moral conflict over this. But the thing is, I also recognize that I, as a middle-aged white guy who is just absolutely swamped in privilege, that I have no right to demand that a bunch of innocents climb up on the goddamn altar for my sense of ideological purity. And maybe that's what separates me from some other people who call themselves progressives.
Right. And I'm just saying they should be getting amnesty. They should be getting citizenship, man.
Yeah, not
they
just should. I mean, right. They're going to work their asses off. They're going to pay taxes. They're going to probably be better citizens than your average member of the Cletus Collective. And we're going to tell them that they can never, ever, ever cast a vote for who represents them. I mean, Jesus, this is the kind of thing, and I think maybe people who are Jewish will understand when I say this. This is the kind of thing that medieval Europe did to the Jews, okay? Well, yeah, we'll let you live here, and we won't let you be a doctor or a landholder, and you can't be a lawyer, and you can't, you know, you'll never be a baron or an earl or a duke, but we'll let you accumulate some wealth. And we'll tax the fuck out of you for the privilege of just being here, but you can't actually participate in the civic life of this nation. You know, and England did it, France did it, Italy did it, they all did it. And goddamn, it's the 21st century, and we're doing it too.
Yeah, they should have the right to vote for Trump, you know, if they want to, because they should have citizenship. And to be honest with you, a lot of the technology that we have today is because of these dreamers. The technology, you know what I mean? The little computer, mini miniature computers that we put in our pockets, that's probably a bunch of dreamers that resigned that. You know what I mean? I mean, these people, these are upstanding citizens that are have. I mean, there's no reason why they should not be able to say that I'm an American citizen. You know, so that's my position on it too.
Well, whatever the country has in store for the dreamers, I've always been of the opinion that they should be circumstantially advantaged in whatever their outcome is. In other words, if I'm 2 years old and my parents come over from some other place and bring me along by virtue of the fact that I'm their kid, I didn't have any say in the matter. And really, I mean, generally speaking, the law says if you're from somewhere else, you've got to have a certain procedure to come into this country. I get that. But there's nothing in the law that specifically addresses the situation that these now grown-up dreamers were in when they were brought here. And that's what needs to be addressed. That's my whole point all along. You know, these people who want to play Old Testament God and say that this is what's written in stone and this is the determining factor with what happens to these kids who are now grown up, that's just crazy. That's crazy talk. And earlier, someone was talking about, you know, getting pissed off and riled up and upset over stuff that people say or write or whatever. I could only go so far in doing that, and then I've got to sit down and regroup and say, wait a minute, these are uninformed people or misinformed people. They're talking out of their ass. You know, how much stock am I going to put in their ravings, you know? And how much time will I have left in my day if I react to every goddamn insane thing that somebody says or writes? There would be no time for anything. So, you know, I'm speaking in favor of balance, I guess. Not in equal time balance, but balance in the sense of you've only got so much time in your life and in your day. Use it wisely. But that's just me. I don't recommend it for someone it doesn't work for.
Well, I understand that, and
sorry, I didn't mean to get off on that, but I.
Well, no, I understand, but we've got. I'm gonna let this roll over just a couple of minutes, and check in with a couple of folks who just wandered by. I don't know why. I don't know why I can't connect with Angry. Angry's been trying to get in all for the last hour or so, and it's been a bust. Let me see here. Who did I lose? I don't think I hung up on anybody. But anyway, let me check in. Let me check in with Silent R. Lamar. He just popped in. You there, Lamar?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome aboard. Thanks for
the
time.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thanks for the challenge this evening.
Yep. More than happy to help.
And I can happily announce here, as we come to the end of the program, the challenge was finished off by Henry. Thank you, Henry. And by Laurel jumped in as well. So thank you. It's official. At 8:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we have a week's end Horn Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. Also, I want to take a minute and welcome a new first-time listener. I had a note early this evening from our friend Sylvia, who said, I've been able to bring my daughter over to listen. She loves your Big Country opening. I'm glad. Thank you. Their music's been a longtime favorite. She's researching our genealogy. On my maternal grandfather's side, we have relatives who had settled in Ohio near the West Virginia border back in the early 1800s. Their descendants still live up the holler. Well, you know, and Steve from New York, you can attest, there are, in fact, and did I lose Steve too? There are, in fact, hollers in Ohio. So welcome. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation so far. I hope there weren't too gosh darn many F-bombs on my part. I apologize if there were. Thanks very, very kindly. And thank you very kindly to Esiklin. Thank you, Esiklin, for jumping in and helping with the Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. Steve said he got knocked off. Network issues on my end. He says, give my best to everyone. Love you all. As we do you. As we do you, Steve. So, Lamar, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much. I've just been enjoying the conversation. So, my daughter, I had to go pick my daughter up from work.
Yeah.
And we were listening, and we were tickled pink about the drunk painters.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know. Happens. Maybe I know about.
Go ahead.
No, you.
I am quite familiar with the joint compound for the PVC piping. I've had a little happy time with that myself.
Yeah, not even on purpose.
No, you can't do it on purpose. See, there's a little bit of fine print down there on the container. Do it in a very ventilated area. Nobody wants to read that part.
Well, no, I mean, you can read that till hell freezes over, but if the pipes ain't in a very ventilated area, you're kind of up a creek.
Yeah, that's why you're supposed to take your your 1940 gas mask and get up under the counter.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You get one of those?
Or into the crawl space of the house. I mean, I've still got plumbing work I'm doing here. Fortunately, I don't have to deal with PVC anymore. Yay, PEX. But the space to get through there, I mean, I lost a lot of weight when I got sick, but I haven't lost quite enough that because the access to the crawl space is a good 4 inches narrower than I am wide. And so it makes it a real claustrophobic party getting in there.
Yeah, I suffer from claustrophobia, so I'm not getting under no house, and I don't like to meet people in the elevator, and Lord, don't let it stop.
Well, exactly, and the thing is, I don't necessarily know what I'm going to meet when I get under that house.
Well, I'm like this. Whenever I meet up under the house, when I went under the house, when I was staying at another place, when I went under the house, I was scared to death, but I knew one thing. I'm killing whatever it is before it kills me getting out.
See, I don't even necessarily have enough room to do that. Not a lot of maneuverability.
You'd be amazed what you can do in a tight spot.
Oh, no, I don't want to think about it, but I imagine I would get rather limber if met with what the ancient Greeks used to refer to as the house snake.
Yes, you would.
But I don't want to think about that, yes. You understand. Well,
that's true. I understand that.
Well, before we jump away, let me take a minute and say hi to Charlie over in Tennistan. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. I'm just wondering if we're entering an age right now where the police force in this country can just pick off anybody they want to and nobody's going to say anything about it.
I don't think we're entering it. I think we've been in it for a while, Charlie. And the word that goes with it is fascism.
And, you know, Angry just had a post on his, a podcast on his show. And it, you know, this killing is just going on all over the world. It just got to me so much listening to the podcast that Angry put on the air, on the internet. I couldn't listen to it all. It was just sickening, you know, the amount of murder and all that he was talking about, and it's going on in this country too. And I can't believe people just don't have a soul anymore, you know.
Charlie, I got a question for you. I was hoping you'd call in. You there?
Yeah.
Are you anywhere near Portland, Tennessee?
Oh, yeah.
I saw something on my news feed the other day that made me laugh, but it made me cry a little, too. Apparently, the city council in a place called Portland, Tennessee, has been trying to do away with drag bars. What's the deal on that? Have you been following that?
I have no idea. Portland is up on the Kentucky border just about. You head up Highway 109 out of Gallatin and go about 15 or 20 miles and you're in Portland. It's a very small town. I never go up there.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was a hotbed of drag bar activity.
I hadn't either. But now that he mentions it's not far from Kentucky, it's all beginning to clarify, crystallize.
Yeah, it is. You can throw a rock and hit Kentucky.
I'll send you a link to the article because it's like, Jesus, don't these people have any city business? I mean, bona fide city business to do?
Not really.
Yeah.
No.
No, there's not a lot of city.
Hey,
there.
Bob.
Yeah, Lamar.
Question. When is the Horn Lab going to get busy on getting that racism pill, that racism remover? When y'all going to get on that?
You know, that's the research lab looked into it, Lamar, but it is apparently an incurable disease in this country.
Well, can y'all come up with an ointment or something?
Well, I was going to say, Lamar, it's a topical ointment, and it's not very stable. They're having trouble in the trials, where it's
totally okay.
Weird. Yeah, we had we did have like a powder that came with a real thin fine toothed comb. It was called Kleagle Be Gone. But we couldn't get people to use it. I think you'd have to put it in the water supply or crop dust a Klan meeting with it or something. And you know, you drop that much dust on them, the cross is going to go out, and then they're going to know what you've done.
Well, that Kleagle Be Gone powder, one of the other things that has cropped up, it has a bleaching element to it. So they end up getting whiter than they were before they applied it. You know, it's just a very, there's some bugs to be worked out of it.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
I figured we need to finish on a lighter note, you know.
Well, and that we did, and we do have to finish. So thank you very kindly for the challenge, Lamar, and thank you to everybody who for all intents and purposes sponsored this program, and that includes Silent R, Lamar, Essequin, Laurel. It includes our buddy Mark in Florida. It includes our dear friend Frank out in the Bay Area. Thank you very kindly. It also includes Henry. Thank you to Henry. And thank you to Louie. Thank you, Louie. And Ernst, who got it all started. So thank you, everybody. We finished even. I didn't see how we could do it, but we did. So thanks very kindly. I'm gonna shut things down because I have a new evening routine now. I go and pick up Ferg from work on the late shift, and I'll be doing that here in about an hour. Just so you'll know, the Horn Labs is an open source affair, and the Horn Labs division in the Quiet Zone. I'm told that that Devin is busily working on Erase Your Ramps, the off-ramp from racism. So, the research continues. The research can only continue. But, boy, I tell you what, any product that involves ramps, I don't know how we're going to ship it, Devin. I just don't know. But thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going each and every month, each and every week, and each and every day. Thank you. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Thank you to each and every one of you who spends your precious finite time engaged in listening to this little conversation, which in 1 month and 9 days will pass our 12th standalone birthday and be nearing 15 years altogether. Thank you, one and all, for participating over the years. Thank you. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. News Ninja Gene has been sending me some amazing stuff lately that I hope to get to on the program, maybe for more on Monday. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal, C-O-A-L, River, R-I-V-E-R, M-T-N on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, follow at Coal River M-T-N, and you can keep up with dispatches from the point of the spear in the human rights struggle in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.